Chapter 21. Dura Lex, said Lex.
You scream louder than fiction, and you get down on your knees, and tear open your heart so I can love you and your disease. You lick the hand that feeds you, and kiss the blade that cuts. I want to touch you in your God's hands when you're praying by.
The brilliant red and gold of the Coruscant sunset spilled in through the council chamber's tall windows, painting the patterned floor in shades of blood and fire. It was an ominous omen, Plo Koon thought. But for what? He didn't know. He had watched the sun move across the sky over the hours as the council argued, coming back over and over again to the same basic points. Seldom at odds, the council was now completely deadlocked, something that hadn't happened in years. Then, as now, the topic of discussion had been Obi-Wan Kenobi. Qui-Gon Jinn, dead for over a decade, would have been shocked to learn that his shy, standoffish Padawan could cause this kind of upset in the Order. "We cannot turn a Jedi Knight over to the Galactic Senate for trial," Adigalia said, cutting off Sacy Teen's suggestion, made for the sixth or seventh time, to do just that. "Not even if that trial is for high treason."
"Obi-Wan Kenobi is not a knight," Oboran Sesis pointed out, frowning beneath his white beard.
"No?" Yoda questioned. "If not a knight he is, then what? Passed his trials, he has, just as every other knight."
"Which does not change the fact that Kenobi resigned from this order years ago," Teen argued. "He may have passed the trials, but that does not make him a Jedi, and that does not make him any less a traitor. If anything, that makes him more of one."
"How so?" Shakti asked, frowning. "Obi-Wan's loyalty to this order has not been a matter of concern for well over a decade now. I think we all know where his allegiances lie."
"This is exactly why he must be turned over to the Galactic Senate for trial."
"That is exactly why he cannot be turned over to the Galactic Senate for trial," Plo put in. "No Jedi Knight has been tried by the Senate since the end of the Old Republic. Whether we like it or not, Obi-Wan Kenobi is a knight now. He has passed his trials. That precedent
cannot be set," Mace Windu finished for him, his eyes narrowed. "The Jedi Order must maintain its jurisdiction over our members and other Force users. If we turn Kenobi over to the Senate or the Executive Office, then the Senate will expect the same treatment for any other Force user or Jedi Knight."
"Sovereign, the Jedi must remain," Yoda agreed. "For our own, even if for no other. And a Jedi, Obi-Wan, is."
His expression dared anyone else on the council to argue with him. Several of the other High Counselors exchanged uneasy looks, Windu among them. Plo steepled his fingers together, studying the faces of the counselors that had taken one side or another, and appeared determined to hold that ground until the sun went supernova. When the session had begun, there had been an almost even three-way split between those who believed that Kenobi should be turned over to the Senate, those who thought he ought to remain in the custody of the Order, and those who were willing to be convinced one way or another. There were fewer who held the first opinion now, but the council still hadn't decided what was to be done with him.
"Just because Obi-Wan passed the trials does not make him a Jedi Knight," Ki-Adi Mundi said, after a moment's pause, with the tones of one who knew he was playing devil's advocate and wasn't necessarily happy about it.
"It is certain that he does not consider himself a Jedi, since he has voiced his opinions regarding this order frequently and at length, and quite recently at that."
Jedi he was born. Jedi he is,
Yoda said flatly.
Change merely because he has left this order, that does not.
The state of his soul does not change either his mind or his allegiance, Ki-Adi-Mundi said. He may have passed the trials, but he is no knight.
And he's still a traitor, Even Pyle said gruffly. No two ways about that. The Senate will have him shot for treason if we hand him over. We can dress it up however you like, but at the end of the day, Obi-Wan Kenobi bends the knee to Queen Amidala, not the Galactic Senate.
This council will not turn any Jedi, Padawan, Knight, or Master, nor any Force user of another discipline over to the Senate to face certain death, Windu declared, finally putting an end to that particular discussion. That still raises the question of what to do with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Releasing him is out of the question, Teen said. Even if he isn't a dark Jedi.
He scowled as if he couldn't believe the likelihood of this, despite the day's earlier events.
He is still an enemy military officer. We can't just let him go.
Speak truly, you do, Yoda admitted. Allowed to return to the Confederacy and to Queen Amidala, he must not be. For the sake of his own soul, and for that of the galaxy.
Queen Amidala won't be a problem much longer, Adi pointed out, her mouth thinning into a line.
Rally around Kenobi, the remainder of the Naboo may, if released he is, Yoda said.
He had been briefed on the invasion earlier. He hadn't approved, but it wasn't as though there was anything he could do about it now. Shakti stapled her hands together.
Then the question is, she said, what do we do with a Jedi who is no longer a Jedi, who has been judged by the Force to have no trace of the dark side in him, but who, if permitted to go free, threatens the safety and security of the Galactic Republic?
Now that was the question, Plo thought. They had been dancing around it all day, but no one had yet put it so succinctly. Obi-Wan Kenobi was what he was. There was no disputing that. Whatever dreams Qui-Gon Jinn had had for his young apprentice had long since been lost, subsumed in the unforeseen trials the Force had set for Obi-Wan after Qui-Gon's murder. This, too, was the will of the Force. Qui-Gon would have understood that. It remained to be seen whether the rest of the council would come to that conclusion as well. Everyone looked at Yoda, who folded his small hands in front of him.
A precedent there is, he said reluctantly. From the days of the Old Republic it is, when much darkness there was in the galaxy. Presided over the last such case, my master's master did, many centuries ago. But shadowed such a path is, even when it concerns one who will not call himself a Jedi. Speak to Obi-Wan before making such a decision, I must.
So how is it that your counterpart is a Jedi Knight, and you aren't?
Just lucky, I guess, Ani said, most of his attention on the dismantled probe droid in his lap. Then he registered who had spoken, and spun around in his seat, jerking to his feet and dumping the droid to the floor. Your Majesty.
Sit down, Captain Skywalker, Queen Amidala said, waving a hand at him. I didn't mean to startle you.
Ani sat, cautious and not really willing to take his eyes off her. Even in the plain clothes of a civilian spacer, she was beautiful. A small, delicate woman with her masses of dark hair pinned up in two snail buns on either side of her head. Without her face paint, she should have looked like Padme. But Ani didn't know how he could possibly confuse the two women, even without the fresh scar on Amidala's forehead. They felt different. They shouldn't have, but somehow they did.
Amidala smiled at him and touched the back of the empty co-pilot's chair. May I?
Yeah, please.
Cursing himself silently, Ani indicated the seat, trying to swallow back his raw nerves as the queen sat down. By the living stars, she was beautiful.
Can I do anything for you, your majesty?
I just needed some space, Amidala said. I didn't mean to bother you.
I'm not bothered,
Ani said, looking away because otherwise he'd lose the next 5 minutes in staring at her.
I meant to thank you for loaning me your astromech droid. He's been really helpful.
He waved vaguely in the direction of R2-D2, who was tucked away in a corner of the cockpit for the duration of the hyperspace flight. The astromech beeped at him in appreciation of the acknowledgement, and Ani's heart turned over.
If the Queen hadn't been on board the Twilight, he might have been more overwhelmed by having an actual astromech droid around.
There were a couple of other astromechs around here somewhere, since the Naboo had somehow managed to fit 3 N1 starfighters in Ani's largest cargo hold, but none of them were as personable as R2-D2. They'd all rejected Ani's friendly overtures.
Worse, at least one of them had been rude enough to C-3PO to make T1LB start to rise, making the astromech squeak and roll away when it had noticed the loader droid.
The actual reason the Queen had loaned him the droid was because he hadn't been trusted with the hyperspace coordinates for their final destination. R2-D2 had synced with a navicomputer to calculate the route, and might actually have succeeded in letting them fly in blind if Ani hadn't known his own ship's systems so well. He wasn't about to let that slip, though. Just had quietly worked up the calculations in case a quick exit from the dialing system became necessary. Ani had no idea what was waiting for them out there. It couldn't be that bad if the Queen of Naboo was headed out. But on the other hand, the Queen was flying on the Twilight instead of the royal yacht, so it couldn't be that good either. Ani didn't know how many people the Queen usually traveled with, but he'd bet C-3PO that it was far more than were currently filling the converted cargo holds on his ship.
The Queen smiled at him. She looked tired, Ani thought, and wondered if she'd been sleepy enough,
before dismissing the question as none of his damn business.
You're welcome, she said.
They both looked out at the star lines streaking past them in hyperspace, both of them silent for a few minutes. Ani racked his brain, trying to decide if it would be ruder to speak to her or to ignore her. She had said she'd wanted space, because she might be traveling with a much-diminished retinue, but that was still a lot of people to fit into a ship that wasn't designed for carrying passengers.
He still jumped when the Queen spoke.
Don't you find it lonely at all, being out here on your own? She swept a hand out towards the viewport. I'd understand if you had a co-pilot, but maybe I just don't understand because I haven't been alone for a long time now. Ani swallowed back his burst of nerves, because she was actually talking to him, and tried to keep his voice steady as he replied.
Sometimes, yeah, but there's 3PO, and I'm in port pretty often.
Belatedly, he leaned down and started picking up the droid parts he'd dropped when she came in, wondering if doing so was rude. If it was, Amidala didn't remark on it.
After I got the Twilight, Ani said suddenly, surprising himself, I went back to Tatooine, to Mos Espa, where I grew up.
The Queen looked at him inquisitively, actually seeming interested.
I had this friend, Kitster Benai. He was free, but there weren't that many kids our age around there, so he hung out with me anyway. We used to talk about leaving Tatooine someday, getting a ship somehow. We weren't really clear on that part. And just flying away, going to see all the stuff the deep space pilots who went through Mos Espa talked about. The moons of Aigo, the jungles of Volusia, Coruscant, anything other than Tatooine.
Anyway, after I got the Twilight, I went back to Mos Espa, which was probably the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life because the hut slave takers were, well, are still looking for me. This was about 3 years ago. He glanced aside. It was right after my mom died.
I'm very sorry,
the queen said, sounding sincere. Thanks, Ani said awkwardly. I'd gone back to Tatooine to find my mom, but she'd been sold, and when I... Anyway, I didn't get there in time. He bit his cheek at the memory of the pitifully small bundle of his mother's body, of palming his blaster and thinking, if I was better, if my powers were worth anything, I could kill them all, and having to walk away without being able to take his revenge. After I buried my mom, I went back to Mos Espa. I had this harebrained idea that Kitster would still be there, and, well, I had a ship. I thought we could go off together and do all that stuff we talked about as kids.
Was your friend still there? Amidala asked.
Yeah, Ani said. He'd apprenticed to a chef at a cantina owned by one of Jabba the Hutt's subsidiaries. One of the nice cantinas, not the kind of place guys like me get our drinks at. They wouldn't let me in the front door, so I went round the back after a shift finished. He was pretty surprised to see me. I'd left Tatooine when I was 12 or 13. Run away from my owner after I sold my mom.
He rubbed a hand over his neck, over the place where the implanted chip was.
We went for a drink. Not his cantina, a different one where I could actually afford the stuff they sell. Kitster didn't want to leave. He liked his job. It was a good gig, I guess, if you're into that sort of thing. I'd be bored sick. All that stuff we talked about when we were kids. To him, it was just talking. The stuff you talk about when you're a kid and you're stuck on a sandy rock of a planet in the ass end of the galaxy. And doing anything else anywhere else sounds better than staying where you are. But he didn't need to leave. Not the way I did. He didn't have the bug, the one that gets you off your world and up into the stars. We had a couple of drinks. I asked him to come with me, and he said no. He had a job. He had a guy that he was going steady with. And then Jabba's slave taker showed up to bring me in, which pretty much put a damper on the evening. That could have gone better. Ani touched his wrists, remembering the binders he'd been too drunk to get out of until the next morning. He still had the scars. Anyway, if the job and the guy hadn't already been enough, the attention was too much for Kitster. I guess he looked up some of my other warrants, too. He said thanks, but no thanks. And that was the closest I've ever gotten to getting a co-pilot. From the sharp gleam in Amidala's eyes, she hadn't missed the part of the story he'd glossed over. But she didn't ask about what Jabba's slave takers did to runaway slaves that were dumb enough to walk back into the town they'd run away from.
Have you seen your friend since?
Ani shook his head. I haven't been back to Tatooine. I don't even fly into hot space anymore. Risk's too high. Most of my other old friends are still on world, or working for Jabba somewhere else. Greedo's some kind of bounty hunter now. I ran into him once on Umbara, and he let me go for old time's sake. A couple of them are dead. A couple got sold off-world. I wasn't the only slave in that bunch.
That sounds difficult, Amidala said. I know a little what it's like to lose friends.
More than a little, Ani thought. If the stories he'd heard about the occupation of Naboo were true.
It was strange to think of this lovely, sweet-faced woman leading troops into battle. Except that was exactly what she was supposed to have done during the occupation.
They're not lost, he said. Most of them are exactly where I left them.
Queen Amidala considered him, her head tipped slightly to one side.
Ani licked his lips, feeling self-conscious under the scrutiny. Amidala was gorgeous, but she wasn't just the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen. She had a presence to her, something that drew people in like satellites orbiting around a star. He understood why the Republic was so damn scared of her. Why several thousand systems had thrown off the Senate's yoke at her suggestion. If Ani had had any allegiance to recant, he would have done so for the chance of a few more hours in her presence. As it was, he was still just the hired help.
"You're very sweet," Amidala told him.
Ani blinked. That hadn't been what he'd been expecting her to say.
Thank you, he offered, since he didn't know what kind of response she wanted.
It's refreshing, the queen clarified.
Well, that's me, Ani said. Refreshing.
He smiled loopily at her. Unable to help himself, and glad there was no one else in the cockpit to see him making a fool of himself in front of the Queen of Naboo.
"What would it take to get the Hutts to lift the bounty on you?" Amidala asked, sounding idly curious.
He blinked at her as the words registered. "Nothing. The Hutts don't lift bounties for escaped slaves. They don't want to set precedent."
"That's too bad."
"It doesn't matter," Ani said. "It's a big galaxy. Plenty of places to hide."
"I've always disliked the idea of hiding." She looked up as an alert on one of the sensor boards started to blink.
"Is that important?"
Ani dumped the mass of droid parts on his lap into a box he kept just for that purpose, kicking it aside. "Proximity alert," he said. "We're about to come out of hyperspace, and there's something big out there." He really wished he had some idea of what that was. He'd never flown through Dalling before, but he'd looked up the system's specs as soon as he'd worked out where the Navi computer was taking them. Nice-sized star system, with a stable star and six planets, one of which was habitable by galactic standards, two with buried or shielded settlements, and a big gas giant with an orbital station. Two decent trade routes passed through the system, which Ani would probably have been reasonably familiar with if he did more runs in the mid-rim instead of further out. Dalling had been an early member of the Confederacy, which meant that Amidala was probably almost as safe here as she was anywhere else in the CIS. R2-D2 warbled and rolled up between Ani and the Queen, extending a thin prong that he inserted into the navicomputer. Ani rolled his eyes and held up his hands, saying, "You know, buddy, she does a lot better on a manual release. I do know how to fly." The droid chirped impudently, making Ani grin and the queen laugh.
"I'll get Captain Typho or one of the other pilots," she said, standing up.
Ani sighed, unable to hide his disappointment, and Amidala hesitated for an instant before sitting back down. "Or," she said, "as it happens, I have the recognition codes and the comm frequency. Take us in, Captain."
"Seriously?" Ani said, then could have bitten his tongue.
Instead, he pulled on a headset and hit the all-ship comm.
"This is the Captain. Prepare to leave hyperspace in 3, 2, 1.
He pulled down on the lever. The star lines in the viewport steadied out, and the sensor boards lit up so brightly Ani couldn't tell if his automatic Hutty's curse.
"It's Shuta!"
A trio of N1 starfighters streaked past the twilight, cutting so close to the freighter that the ship trembled a little, the collision alert shrilling a warning too late. Ani jerked the twilight down, the acceleration pushing him back against his seat.
"Push a Wampa, scotch a Clonakey!"
"Attention, unidentified civilian vessel,"
someone barked in his ear. Ani recognized the Naboo accent immediately.
"You have 60 seconds to activate your identification beacon or be destroyed."
Ani hit the button to activate the beacon. The legitimate beacon, not one of the fakes he carried for various reasons. His heart was pounding so hard that he thought it was going to leap out of his chest. The Naboo never screwed around with threats like that. They shot first and asked questions later. "This is the independent freighter Twilight on,
detached assignment to the Crown of Naboo. We're inbound for... He looked at Amidala, fighting down the urge to panic. That was an entire war fleet out there. More battleships than he'd ever seen at one time before, and every single one of them so heavily armed that it made the Twilight's pair of quad lasers look like a couple of pop guns. The Battlestar Indomitable, Amidala supplied. The Battlestar Indomitable, Ani finished obediently, wondering what in Boba Kwee-Kwee he'd gotten himself into. Well, he had said he'd wanted to see a Battlestar up close. He had to stop wishing for things. He was starting to get them.
Freighter Twilight, you are ordered to immediately transmit your recognition codes.
The Queen twitched her fingers at him, and Ani slid the headset off and handed it over, so distracted by the new alert blinking on his boards that he missed the code entirely. No fewer than 12 different vessels had them in their sights, and possibly more, since at that point the Twilight sensors were overwhelmed and lost the ability to calculate incoming signals. Ani never thought he'd need to know if the Twilight was being targeted by more than, three ships at most. Not the hundreds there seemed to be in the fleet in front of him. Amidala touched his arm, getting his attention, and offered him the headset back. "We're clear for approach," she said. "Shadow Squadron is going to escort us in." "Shadow?" She indicated the N1 starfighters that were now hanging just inside of the viewport. The nearest pilot. Ani couldn't tell whether they were male or female, or even what species they were. Gave him a jaunty wave. "Oh," Ani said faintly. "Great. So which one is the Indomitable?" Amidala pointed at the sensor boards, where one of the glowing dots was outlined in blue, though it was nearly swallowed up by the hundreds of yellow dots glowing around it. They must have transmitted their location while she was on the comm with them. "I'm not getting paid enough for this," Ani said under his breath, sliding his headset back on. Amidala stood up, considering him for a moment. "I'd better go reassure my retinue that you haven't succeeded in getting us blown out of the stars. I'll send one of the other pilots up in case we're challenged again, but there shouldn't be any more trouble." "Oh, great," Ani said, his hands on the controls as he eased the Twilight forward. One of the N1s dropped down in front of him, leading the way. He knew that the rest of the squadron had to be around somewhere, but there were too many contacts on his sensor boards to pinpoint their locations relative to the Twilight. "Shouldn't be." Being sarcastic to the Queen of Naboo was probably a hanging offense, but Ani was too rattled right now to consider his self-preservation instincts, which, as 3PO liked to point out, weren't that good anyway. "Don't worry," the Queen said. "R2 will keep you from getting into any trouble." The astromech warbled reassuringly. "Oh, great," Ani said again. "You did very well," said the Queen, then leaned down and kissed his cheek. It was a good thing R2-D2 was plugged into the Twilight's controls, or Ani might have driven the ship into one of their N1 escorts. He was still staring blankly at the viewport when the door behind him slid open and the Queen left, replaced a minute later by an irritated-looking pilot officer Jasvi Tamriel. "You weren't supposed to fly us in," she said. "Take it up with Her Royal Highness," Ani said automatically. "What is that?" Tamriel smiled. "It's the First Fleet," she said. "It's the biggest war fleet in the galaxy, and it's ours." "Oh," Ani said faintly. He'd heard about the First Fleet, of course he had, but he hadn't imagined anything so big. It was almost beyond human comprehension. "Of course. Obviously." She gave him a strange look. "Are you all right? I can take us in." "I'm fine," Ani snapped, stung. "And no one is flying my ship but me, thanks." He could still feel the spot on his cheek where the queen had kissed him. Obi-Wan Kenobi was still wearing the same Jedi robes he had worn for his trials, though he had shed his boots, which were standing neatly in the corner of his cell. He was sitting on the side of his cot, his head in his hands, and didn't look up as the cell door slid open. "We'll be just outside, Grandmaster," said one of the temple guards, who had accompanied Yoda into the high security cells. Obi-Wan's shoulders tightened, but he didn't look up as the door shut and the lock engaged. The currents of the Force cut off from both of them. Yoda rested his gimmer stick on the floor in front of him, his hands curved over the top as he studied Obi-Wan through the ray shield that separated them. Until yesterday, he hadn't seen Obi-Wan in the flesh for more than 5 years. Not since before Naboo's secession from the Republic. The bones of the boy he had been were still visible in the man he had become, harder and sharper than Qui-Gon had ever dreamed for his young apprentice. When Obi-Wan didn't look up, Yoda cleared his throat. "What do you want?" Obi-Wan demanded of the floor in front of him. "Your attention I will settle for, young Obi-Wan," Yoda said. Obi-Wan sighed, then straightened up, rubbing his hands over his face. He came to his feet and walked over to kneel in front of the ray shield, wrapping his hands around one knee. "Master Yoda," he said, "I'm glad to see that you're well."
"Well enough, young Obi-Wan. Worse wounds than this I have taken, and not a killing wound was this meant to be."
The layers of flex-wrapped bacta bandages still crinkled a little as Yoda moved, but there were worse fates to endure, and the healers had assured him that even that small indignity would be gone soon enough. Lightsaber wounds were seldom meant to be survivable. Obi-Wan's voice was coolly impersonal as he added, "I wasn't happy to hear that my name was used on the attack on you. I'd hate for you to think that I'd ever be so clumsy as to miss my target."
"Commit murder, would you?"
"If you've seen the transcripts of my trial, you'd know the answer to that," Obi-Wan said.
"I would, I have, and I probably will again, if it becomes necessary."
He studied Yoda for a moment, his expression unreadable.
"And if I ever get out of this cell, an outcome that becomes less likely with every day that passes. Trials or no trials, I'm not exactly popular."
"Not wise, is it, for you to antagonize the Council?" Yoda said dryly.
"Approve of that, Qui-Gon Jinnwood."
Obi-Wan's mouth twitched for a moment.
"That's probably about the only thing that's happened in the past month that Qui-Gon would have approved of."
"Passed your trials, you did. Approve of that, he would."
"He did."
Obi-Wan waited a beat for Yoda's response.
Yoda nodded, unsurprised. "See him in the chamber of the ordeal, you did."
"I saw a lot of things in the Chamber of the Ordeal." Obi-Wan tipped his head back slightly, using his slightly superior height. Kneeling, he was almost on level with Yoda, to look down at him. "At least I was spared having to relive his murder. I've done that enough times in my dreams."
"Pass in time, dreams do."
For a moment, Obi-Wan's clear blue gaze was shadowed.
"Not all of them. Some things stay with you forever."
He met Yoda's eyes. "If you're here to ask me to come back to the Order, the answer is no. I know why I resigned the Order. Those reasons are still valid. Now more so than ever."
"Past your night's trials, you have," Yoda pointed out. "Much delayed they have been,
and in much doubt of the outcome the council was. Proved them wrong, you have. Jedi, you are, young Obi-Wan. Deny that, you cannot. A place for you there is in this order. A place there always has been.
Even if I wanted to come back, Obi-Wan said, no one else would have me here. I'm the most wanted man in the galaxy. There are beings who have committed actual crimes with fewer bounties on their heads. 5 days ago, the Jedi nearly rioted over having me here. The Jedi, Master Yoda. What makes you think they would accept me? What makes you think I could even do a knight's duty in the Republic?
Sovereign, the Jedi are, Yoda said. Allowances would be made. Precedent for such things there is.
Obi-Wan leaned forward slightly.
It's always good to see that the Jedi Order is still willing to bend or break laws they're supposed to enforce, he said. Sometimes I'm in danger of almost thinking I made the wrong decision. This isn't one of those times.
Even through the wards, Yoda felt the Force shift slightly. Obi-Wan Kenobi was very strong in the Force, maybe even stronger than any other living knight of his generation. And he was very angry.
I passed the trials. That doesn't make me a knight. I also didn't even want to take the trials, which really ought to be a mark against my favor.
Obi-Wan's grip on his knee tightened. But despite the depth of his anger, his voice remained calm.
I'm not some Padawan who's never known anything but the Order. Master Yoda, maybe I was once, but I haven't been that boy for a long time now. I have a wife. I have a home. I have responsibilities. I am not and never will be loyal to the Galactic Republic or the Jedi Order again. I might have broken one set of vows, but I'm not breaking the second, no matter what.
Yoda considered him.
Visions in the chamber of the ordeal you had.
Obi-Wan arched his eyebrows.
Yes. Speak of them, will you?
I was under the impression that anything that happened in the trials was never to be spoken of,
Obi-Wan said, his tone challenging.
Your decision it is whether or not to answer,
Yoda allowed.
Then I would prefer not to, Obi-Wan said. Suffice it to say that nothing that I saw in the trials did anything to change my mind. Maybe I was born a Jedi Master. Maybe Jedi I was born, and Jedi I will live, and Jedi I will die. Maybe we are Jedi our entire lives from birth to death, and there is nothing even I can do to change what I was born to be. But I cannot do it, Master. I will not do it. I couldn't do it 12 years ago, and I won't do it today. You can kill me if you want. You can turn me over to the Senate to stand trial for treason. You can keep me in these cells forever, but I will never return to the Order.
Yoda studied him silently.
Obi-Wan's expression was calm, with none of the agitation he had displayed in the council chamber during his trial. Yoda had seen that many times before in new knights, a kind of serenity that the passage of the trials bestowed. Only the deep currents of his anger was at odds with his outward demeanor, and even that was tamped down beneath his newfound tranquility. There was something disquieting about it.
Admit it, do you, that Jedi you are?
Obi-Wan hesitated before answering, then said slowly,
Qui-Gon always said that even a Jedi who left the Order was still a Jedi, because what we are born to be and trained to be,
goes deeper than any oaths we take or vows we break. Deeper even than how we live or how we die. What we are is written in our bones, on our souls. We are Jedi in the Force, even if the Order never finds us. When I was a Padawan, I couldn't understand how that could be true, because the Order was everything to me. I thought the Order and the Code were the Jedi. Now I know better. He stood abruptly, lacing his hands together behind his back. I am a Jedi, Master Yoda. I never had a choice to be anything else, even when I thought I did. I thought I could cut that part of myself out. But I can't, because Jedi is what I am. It isn't just our vows. It isn't the Order. It isn't even the Code. I know that now. My path has been so dark. Darker than I ever dreamed it could be. If you had asked me 12 years ago if I could live the life I've lived and still be a Jedi, I would have told you that that was impossible. That's because I didn't know what the Jedi really were. I thought I did. I thought the Order had betrayed the Jedi. I thought that because of what I had done during the occupation, I could never be a Jedi again. But I was wrong. What we are is more than the Order or the Code. The trials showed me that. Maybe I am a Jedi. But that's not all I am, or all I will ever be. I know that now, the way I didn't know it 12 years ago. You don't really want me back in the Order, Master. You and the rest of the High Council just can't stand the idea of having a renegade knight running around who you can't control. Well, I am not your knight, and I will not live or die by the Code, and I will never be a member of this Order again. Go and tell the Council that. And then you can decide what to do with me, because I will never be what you want me to be. Despite the size of the retinue she had brought along, Queen Amidala only took Rabe and Padme with her when she debarked from the Twilight, which had landed in the Indomitable's portside hangar bay. Everyone else remained on board, even Captain Typho and, perhaps unsurprisingly, Anakin and Obi-Wan, whom Amidala had brought along for reasons known only to herself. Padme suspected that under normal circumstances, there would have been considerably more ceremony marking the Queen's arrival on the Battlestar. But under normal circumstances, Queen Amidala probably wouldn't have slipped out of Theed with the smallest retinue possible and hired an independent smuggler to transport her instead of taking the royal yacht. Instead, there were only two people waiting for them at the base of the ramp, neither of whom Padme had ever met personally in her own universe, but whom she recognized from the previous day's holoconference. Admiral Gina Rioni rendered the Queen a crisp salute. In person, she was a tall, golden-skinned human, or near-human, Padme couldn't tell which, woman with her elaborately braided hair tucked up beneath her uniform cap. The handmaiden beside her, dressed in civilian clothes, acknowledged the Queen with a slight bow, her gaze calculating. "Your Majesty, it's an honor to have you on board," Admiral Rioni said. "Captain Kalani wanted to come and greet you in person, but we decided that, under the circumstances, it was preferable to only have one of us absent from the bridge at a time." Her gaze went to the bulk of the Twilight behind them, which stood in contrast to the sleek shuttles, gunships, and starfighters that took up most of the hangar. It had largely been cleared of its usual deck crew, though a few still remained, watching the scene avidly. "It's an unusual situation," Queen Amidala acknowledged. In the interests of anonymity, she was wearing neither her face paint nor the royal regalia, and was instead dressed in a white spacer's tight pants and shirt, with a heavy waffle-weave cape thrown on over her shoulders and a blaster holstered on her hip. Without her elaborate court gowns or face paint, she looked pared down, a little feral and a little dangerous, made even more so by the healing wound on her forehead. For some reason, Padme hadn't expected that from her, though she didn't know why she was surprised. The first time they had met, Amidala had put a blaster to her head. "Is there somewhere else we can speak with more privacy?" the Queen went on. "And before then, I need your Marines to transfer two prisoners from my ship to your brig. Captain Typho can tell you who." She flicked a hand vaguely at the twilight, as Admiral Rioni nodded, raising her comlink to issue the orders. While she was speaking, Lydia moved closer to the Queen and said, "Where are the others, my lady?" "Still on Naboo," Amidala said. "Under the circumstances, I didn't want to chance it becoming common knowledge that I'd gone off-world. Sasabe's on the throne with the others to back her up. We'll rendezvous on Roxas for the Congress." "I heard it was bad at home," Lydia said. "Jamie's been worrying about his family ever since the relays went down." "Her husband," Robbie muttered to Padme, apparently seeing her blank expression. "Commodore Jamie Osuna, second in command of the First Fleet and commander of Strike Group 1. Normally Lydia is on the Dauntless with him, but she must have transferred to Indomitable when Prince Bale came on board." Lydia, hearing the whispering, turned towards them, starting to smile. When she recognized Padme, the expression slid away, her face wiped clean with shock. Padme was wearing a hooded cloak that covered her hair and shadowed her face, but the resemblance must have been obvious to a handmaiden who presumably knew the Queen well. "What?" she began. "Who?" The Queen laid a hand on her arm, making her start. "Robbie or I can explain later," she said. "But for the time being, all you need to know is that this is Padme, and she is trustworthy." "Padme?" Lydia repeated, looking at her with suspicion. "It's a long story," Padme said apologetically. The sound of her voice made Lydia's dark eyebrows lift even further. "And a little complicated." "I can see that," Lydia said doubtfully. But apparently she had decided to take her queen's word for it, because she didn't ask again. Admiral Rioni stepped back towards them. "The Marines are on their way," she said. "Do you want to wait for them to arrive, my lady? It shouldn't take more than a few minutes." "That won't be necessary." The Queen fell in beside the Admiral as they made their way to the nearest hatch, Padme and the two handmaidens following. Padme glanced back over her shoulder just in time to see Anakin watching worriedly from the entrance to the twilight, and raised a hand in acknowledgement. He nodded once, but she was aware of his eyes on her until they left the hangar. There wasn't much difference between the interior corridors of the Battlestar and the few Star Destroyers Padme had been on, though she was certain that Anakin or Obi-Wan would have been able to tell them apart. To her, they were all just big starships. Men and women, clones among them, in the unfamiliar uniforms of the Royal Naboo Space Navy and the Royal Naboo Marine Corps, passed them by, stopping to stand against the sides of the corridors and salute as they recognized Admiral Rioni. Rioni returned the salutes, her expression calm. No one asked her about the three strangers she was escorting, and if anyone recognized Queen Amidala without her face paint, no one mentioned it. The Admiral led them deep into the depths of the Battlestar, to a hatch labeled HCR-17, and guarded by a pair of Marines in utility uniforms, their DC-17 blaster rifles held at their sides. They came to attention as Admiral Rioni approached, one of them hitting the control to open the hatch. Padme almost smiled as she saw Bail Organa sitting at the table inside, then remembered that he wasn't her Bail Organa, and stopped herself before she did more than quirk her lips. Bail straightened up as the hatch opened, relief showing on his face as he recognized Amidala. He waited for all five of them to come inside and the hatch to close before he stepped forward. "Padme, I didn't think you were actually serious." "I'm always serious, Bail," Amidala said, stepping forward to hug him quickly. "Did you get through to Brayan Mon?" "Yes, though it's blasted hard having a conversation this way. They'll get the delegates to Alderaan one way or another. Or the ones who haven't already made up their minds, anyway. We're going to lose at least a dozen systems."
He sat down again at her gesture, Amidala settling into the seat beside him. Padme started to move into the usual position for a pair of handmaidens accompanying the queen. Then Rabe touched her elbow and drew her down into another seat, further down the table. She was careful to place herself so that she was between Bale and Padme, partially blocking his view of her. Lydia and the Admiral sat down on the opposite side of the table, the other handmaiden still eyeing Padme warily. Bale didn't look at them at all, apparently practiced enough to ignore Amidala's attendants unless they demanded his attention. "Are any of them important?" Amidala asked. Bale considered the question. "Rendili's got its own fleet. From what I've heard, their government's split over the question. Mon says that it looks like whichever way they jump, it's going to land them in a civil war. And if we lose Trillin, then we'll lose the Trillin trade route. It's not a key hyper route, but I hate to lose any of them. We've had enough problems jumping around as it is. Us and the Republic," he added, his lips quirking. "Giselle has those mineral-rich moons they've been mining for a millennium. Kamas isn't keen on the war, but he know how the Kamasi feel about fighting, so it's not like that's a surprise. They've had it up to here with the Senate's direct, though, and it looks like even Dooku is not going to be able to conciliate them this time, though Breya says he's been doing his damnedest. It's an open question whether the attacks at Sereno and Gaius pushed them out of the Confederacy or not. I guess we won't know until they show up. Or don't. There's a possibility that if they go back to the Republic, Alderaan could be cut off from the Commonore run forward, but my gut says that's not Kamas' style. They barely let the Republic put warships in their territory when those pirates' attacks started heating up 6 years ago. That's the worst of it, I think. The others we can lose without major repercussions. Aside from the fact they're core walls, you mean? Rabe put in. He nodded. Aside from that. The others, I think most of them are just spooked. Having you there will go a long way towards calming them, he added to Amidala, who nodded. That's why I'm here, she said, among other reasons. Bale's dark eyebrows arched upwards.
Are you still thinking about taking the First Fleet into the core? You're right that you can get it as far as Chandrila or Alderaan without being detected by the Republic.
Probably, Admiral Rioni put in.
Without the main hull and it relays up, our sensors can only do so much. And intelligence isn't particularly sanguine at the moment about being able to detect Republic watch stations unless we end up on top of them.
There's a good chance that the Republic Navy might have dropped new beacons while the relays were down. None of our slicers have had any luck getting into the Republic Milnet or their emergency relays.
I brought someone who might be able to help with that, Amidala said blandly, and Padme winced internally. Because who she meant was Obi-Wan, who had reluctantly offered to try using his Jedi High Council and Gar military authority to backdoor a way in if they could get him a remote, or hardline, connection to a relay station. Padme hadn't even known that that was an option. Obi-Wan hadn't mentioned it to her or Anakin, though he'd clearly spent some time thinking it over before making the offer. He'd been very clear when he presented the idea to the Queen that his ability to get into the system wasn't a certainty, since his personal codes wouldn't work, and there was a possibility that the override codes were different in this universe.
Intelligence will appreciate that, Rioni said, not looking surprised by this information.
Bale's eyebrows had arched up again, but he didn't question it.
The fleet? He asked Amidala again.
I am aware of the delicate sensibilities of the core worlds, the Queen said, with heavy irony in every word. I won't take the entire First Fleet to Alderaan or Chandrila. One of the strike groups.
That's still well over 40 warships, Bale said.
Padme, I'm sorry, but this isn't the Mid-Rim. You can't take any kind of significant military force into the core. I'm not even talking about the Republic's reaction. Every system in the core will panic if you do. You can't.
Amidala frowned. Rendili has a war fleet.
Yeah, but they're a core world. Naboo isn't. Bringing a foreign war fleet into the core?
He shook his head. That will lose you the core worlds even faster than anything else. They'll take it as a threat. The war hasn't touched the core yet. Alderaan and Chandrilla, a few of the others, we understand and we won't leave the Confederacy, but for the others, it's all been theoretical.
Well, then they ought to find out that it isn't theoretical, Amidala snapped, then sighed and pushed a few loose strands of hair back from her face.
I'm sorry, Bale. I've been a little on edge recently. I haven't been to the core since Naboo seceded. How big an escort could I bring and not make it look like I've come to reduce Alderaan to a few chunks of space rock?
Bale hesitated.
A couple of starfighters? He hazarded.
You must be joking, Rabe said.
It's the core,
Bale said helplessly.
Even Dooku couldn't get away with the kind of military escort you're used to traveling around with, Padme.
Blast.
Amidala rested her elbow on the table, chin tilted against the heel of her hand.
You're certain? I'm certain. Maybe in a year or so, but not now. Not even you.
In that case, I might as well not take an escort at all, Amidala said.
Lydia and Rabe both grimaced, and Admiral Rioni looked unhappy.
My lady,
Amidala held up a hand to silence their protests. As far as anyone knows, I'm still on Naboo until I leave for the Congress in a few days. I'd rather as few people as possible are aware that I've left.
Brea and Mon didn't inform the delegates that I was coming, she added to Bale. He shook his head. Just that you were sending a representative to assuage their fears. I wasn't sure that you actually would come, not after what happened to Obi-Wan.
Padme flinched. Amidala's mouth tightened for a moment, but she said, Obi-Wan's part of the reason I had to come. Admiral Rioni massaged her temples.
My lady, you're not going to do anything, stupid, the Queen suggested.
Rash, the Admiral finished.
Are you?
Not excessively so, Amidala said. Comparatively speaking. The holocom set at the center of the table chose that moment to beep urgently. Admiral Rioni checked the source, then leaned over to activate it. The image of an Arcanian offshoot male in fleet uniform and a captain's insignia sprang up in miniature.
Your Royal Highness,
he said, saluting Amidala, who inclined her head in acknowledgement. Captain Isvan Kalani, I presume.
Yes, Your Highness, it's an honor.
He looked frazzled.
Does someone want to tell me why two Jedi Knights were just brought on board my ship in chains? The one in the brig is enough. I don't need two more.
It's actually four, Amidala said. The other two are on our side. There was a long moment of silence, so complete that Padme could almost hear it echoing around the conference room. Then Captain Kalani said in tones of horror,
There are five Jedi on my ship?
And half a dozen Republic fleet officers and the Viceroy of the Trade Federation, Lydia added helpfully, making the captain groan.
Your Majesty, I don't mean to question you, but...
Don't worry, Captain, Amidala said. If I can't take the First Fleet all the way to Alderaan, then they won't be on Indomitable for long.
The atmosphere in the executive office in the Senate building was electric. Dooku could feel the Force humming with the intensity of the emotions in the big room, stretched out halfway across the galaxy as the members of the Assault Force waited for confirmation. The fleet was waiting in the Rendellia system, a short hyperspace jump from Naboo. They wouldn't have to be in hyperspace for more than 15 minutes between leaving Rendellia and arriving in Naboo. Although Republic-aligned, the system was unoccupied except for a single satellite outpost that had been manned by criminals before the war, and had switched to remote once the fighting began. If the Naboo were doing security sweeps, the nearby Kalida Nebula would blur their sensors, hiding the massive Republic fleet.
Even the remaining members of the Jedi High Council had been rousted out of the temple for the occasion, Yoda included, to Dooku's great relief. The Grandmaster was moving stiffly and slower than usual, but his presence in the Force was as strong as ever, and he had been brought up to speed on the current situation before arriving at the executive office. He didn't seem approving, but then again, he seldom did. Also present was most of the Military Oversight Committee. Dooku would have preferred not to have Lot Dodd of the Trade Federation and Loras Ruin of the Techno-Union here, but both parties were supplying ships for the Republic fleet, so there was no way to gracefully exclude them. Despite the number of people in the room, the executive office didn't feel overcrowded. The Jedi, the senators, and representatives from Gar High Command, Fleet Command, and the Special Operations Bureau had each clustered into small groups of their own, looking at the various holoprojectors that were showing star charts and real-time updates of the Republic fleet. Right now, they had no eyes on Naboo. The former Republic satellites in the system had been disabled over a decade ago, and none of SOB's assets had been able to put spy chips in the Naboo ones. Once the Republic fleet arrived, they would begin transmitting images of the system, but until then, they were virtually blind. Despite the anxiety in the Force, the room was nearly silent, everyone too keyed up to speak. Dooku clasped his hands on top of his desk, watching the miniature image of the fleet projected in front of him. Hundreds of warships rested gently in space, the bright gleam of the nearby nebula just at the edge of the image, all of them waiting for final confirmation from the Jedi's agent in the Theed Royal Palace. Any moment now. Dooku could feel the Force drawn tight, lingering close to the edge of snapping. Soon. Very soon. The communications panel on his desk began to beep. Almost everyone in the room swung around to look at Dooku. The only being who didn't was Yoda, who was sitting on his hover chair studying the nearest holoprojection. Dooku reached down to tap the comm panel, the glowing letters of the text message springing up in the air in front of him. It had already been decoded by the time it came to him.
Blackfish on world. Confirm door is open.
Blackfish was the codename for Queen Amidala of Naboo. Dooku felt his stomach clench, his nerves leaping the way they had when he had still been a knight, ready to embark on a new, dangerous mission. It had been years since he had been in the field, but that was a feeling he'd never forgotten. He touched the comm panel again, opening a secure frequency between his office and the fleet flagship Leviathan. Admiral Wilhuff Tarkin answered immediately, his image appearing over the desk next to that of the fleet.
Your Excellency, do we have a go?
We have a go, Admiral, Dooku said. He took a deep breath, feeling the Force shift as he spoke. After today, the galaxy would never be the same again. All units, this is the Supreme Chancellor. Execute Operation Frostbite. After Yoda left, hours passed. Obi-Wan tried to meditate, but he couldn't fight his way through the fog in his head caused by the Force-nulling wards. It had seemed so clear during the trials, everything beautifully pure and simple, as the Force hadn't been for him for years. That clarity had already started to fade as he left the chamber of the ordeal, and had been gone entirely by the time Obi-Wan had been escorted back to the high security cells. But he could still remember what it had felt like. He couldn't believe that he had forgotten how beautiful the Force could be. He had had a choice, once, between the stark, unyielding purity of the Force and Padme wreathed in moonlight, the certainty of his own righteousness, and chosen the latter without hesitation. But some days... You could never escape what you had been born to. No one, Jedi or not, could outrun the will of the Force. Obi-Wan had made a lot of choices in his life, some of them worse than others, but that was a decision he would never be able to make. And now, it was all out of his hands. Groaning, he threw an arm up to cover his eyes, his gaze skating away from the graffiti on the opposite wall. Beneath him, the cot was hard and unyielding, though far from the worst surface he had ever slept on. It was the wards that made the room almost unbearable. The wards, and the ray shield lay across the door, the humming of the blasted thing almost enough to drive Obi-Wan mad. He'd woken up more than once from nightmares of the fight with Darth Maul, separated from the duelists only by a thin width of humming energy as he watched Qui-Gon die over and over again in his dreams. Not once had Obi-Wan ever dreamed he could save him. Not once in 13 years, and the Force knew that he would probably spend the rest of his life, however little remained of it, haunted by the memory.
Obi-Wan, promise. Promise me.
Damn you, Master, I did it. It's not my blasted fault the Council didn't believe me.
He didn't realize he had spoken out loud until he heard the words echo in the small cell.
There was no response, of course. Obi-Wan was already mostly convinced that he had hallucinated Qui-Gon's presence during the trials.
The Sith. The Sith have returned. You must tell the Council. It is the purpose of the Jedi to hunt the Sith. Promise me, Obi-Wan. They have been here all along.
Damn you, Obi-Wan whispered. Whatever else could be said about him, and there was a lot of that, both flattering and otherwise, Obi-Wan Kenobi had always done his duty. All of it, except that.
Is it not the purpose of the Jedi to hunt the Sith?
There are other evils in this galaxy beside the Sith, Master. I cannot hunt one enemy when there is another before me. And Oathbreaker or not, there are some vows I will never break.
There was no response, not even from his fevered imagination. Obi-Wan could feel the wards weighing on him, heard the whisper threaded through the Force and its siren song that tangled around his mind, sunk fishhooks into his soul.
Traitor. Murderer. Liar. Oathbreaker.
The whispers weren't wrong. Have heart, O child of the living stars. You who have walked through fire and blood have nothing to fear from ash and bone.
It was a line from a poem, one of the intricate Naboo epics of eons past. Padme had read it to him during a summer spent at Varrakeno, the Naboo family villa in the Lake Country. Obi-Wan conjured up the memory of that day, lying on the beach with his head in Padme's lap, watching the clouds drift by overhead, the sound of Padme's voice, a soothing litany.
Dear ancestors, let me see her again. As the stars burn in the heavens, let this not be the end for us.
The Jedi would never permit him to walk out of the temple alive.
Oathbreaker. Traitor. You should have let the Sith kill you on Naboo all those years ago. You who were unaccounted for, who was never wanted. The Jedi who was and should not have been. Lies, Kenobi. So many lies. Do you even know what they will find when they strip the skin from your bones? When they rip your mind from your skull? Is there anything left of the man you should have been? A Jedi who leaves the Order is nothing, has nothing. He is skin over bones and hollow as a drum. Oathbreaker.
Obi-Wan felt his lips curl back in a sneer. You want to break me? You try telling me something I haven't told myself 1,000 times before. I knew what I was doing to my soul when I walked away from the Order.
He didn't open his eyes as he heard the door to his cell open,
though every muscle tensed, and his fists tightened until he could feel his nails digging into the skin of his palms. He wouldn't give them the satisfaction.
"Get up," Quinlan Vos said.
Obi-Wan jerked to his feet, staring at the three Jedi gathered outside his cell. With the door open, the wards had abated enough that he could catch a hint of their intentions in the Force, but that didn't make any sense.
"What in blazes are you doing here?"
Plo Koon tapped a quick code into the control panel beside the shield emitter. A moment later, the ray shield separating them vanished with a buzz of dissipating energy. Obi-Wan stayed where he was, wary and tensed for a fight.
"What does it look like, Kenobi?"
Quinlan said, tossing something at him. Obi-Wan caught it reflexively, looking down at his lightsaber hilt and then up at the trio of Jedi. Ahsoka Tano grinned at him.
"We're breaking you out,"